This is Classic Rain number 17 for April 18th, 2020. I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR. In 1974, Rain's founder, Hap Holly, KC9RP, was graduated from Principia College in Southern Illinois. One of his classmates was Rick Dearborn, N1CKU. Rick went on to become radio operations manager for WCSN, an international 500-kilowatt shortwave juggernaut owned at the time by the Christian Science Publishing Society in Boston, Massachusetts. Hap caught up with Rick at the 1988 Dayton Hamvention.
Well, WCSN is owned by the Christian Science Publishing Society in Boston. It broadcasts two forms of programming. One is news and one is religious, and we make clear distinctions between the two. The news programming is referred to as the World Service of the Christian Science Monitor, and the religious programming, which runs on the weekends predominantly, is called the Herald of Christian Science. We presently have one station in operation in the state of Maine, one that's operating in the island of Saipan, KYOI, and one which is under construction in South Carolina. The call sign of that station will be WSHB. The station in Maine is a 500-kilowatt station, which makes it, I believe, the most powerful independently owned radio station in the world. HCJB is also 500,000 watts, and they're independently owned, but I don't think they have quite the antenna gain we have, which therefore makes our ERP the most powerful station. The specs of the station in South Carolina will be the same, although it will have two 500-kilowatt transmitters. And our station in Saipan has a 100-kilowatt transmitter right now. It's being upgraded over the next year to add several new antennas and have another transmitter. It'll have two 100 kilowatts out there.
Now, I know that WCSN uses at its main transmitter a curtain antenna. I and probably any other ham around would give his right arm for. What are the particulars about your curtain antenna there?
Well, the antenna in all cases are antennas which are called dipole curtain arrays. And what that means basically is they are a series of dipoles, resonant dipoles, which exist in a vertical curtain. They're horizontally polarized, but they exist in a curtain. By selecting different groups of dipoles, we can direct the signal in 15-degree increments in different directions across the globe. Also, because there are multiple dipoles, they resonate at the appropriate frequency. So we don't have to tune them up, per se. We just apply the signal to the appropriate portion of the curtain for the right direction we want. The signal will find the resonant dipole by itself.
How large is it?
Well, I don't know. I think it is about 300 feet high, 300-some feet high, and I would say it's at least that wide. I think it's pretty much square. It's 300 by 300 approximately, and there's two of them in Maine. There's one for frequencies below 11 megahertz and one for frequencies above 11 megahertz. And obviously the one for the low-band antenna is considerably larger than the other one. If you looked at it up close, it looks like a sort of like a spider's web. Not the same radial-type pattern you'd see in a spider's web, but more horizontal. It's just a series of dipoles that all strung together. It looks like a big web curtain. And behind that, there is a mesh grid that's located, oh, I would say 10 to 20 feet behind it, which is grounded and acts as a reflector. Okay. So that gives it its directionality, which means the antenna then has, depending on the frequency, the gain varies depending on frequency and direction, but the average gain of the antenna in the forward direction is 20 dB. Actually, even though we do have some leakage out the back end, there actually is some gain off the back end is about 6 dB. So if you take 500 kilowatts times 20 dB, you have 50 megawatts ERP out the front of the antenna.
And what do you feed it with?
It's fed with a balanced transmission line. Open air transmission line. The transmitter is unbalanced. There's a coaxial transmission line that leaves the transmitter, goes through a large TVI filter that looks like two huge mufflers on a gigantic exhaust pipe. I believe the coax is 8 inches in diameter. It's a solid metal conduit coax. It goes from the transmitter through an antenna switch, which can select it to either go to the antenna or to the dummy load. And then it goes out into the antenna field, and there is a ballon in the field, which is, oh, I would guess, 50 to 100 feet long, that makes the conversion to balanced line. And then from there on, its open-air feeder is out to an antenna switch, which selects whether it goes to the high or low-band antenna. And then under each antenna, there's another antenna switch, which selects the direction that we want to orient the signal. And then from there, it goes up balanced into the antenna, and then the antenna resonates with the appropriate dipole.
Sounds like it's all probably computerized control.
No, it's not computerized. It's someone punches buttons in the control room and simply, you know, says, I want antenna position here to the low band antenna or whatever, and it will switch there. The transmitter is computerized in that this particular transmitter has PLL frequency synthesizer. It also is a computer, which microprocessor, which automatically tunes the transmitter to the appropriate frequency. The spec on it is that once the transmitter is warmed up on the dummy loader, it's not in a cold start situation, it's supposed to tune up and come on full power automatically on any frequency in any of the shortwave international broadcasting bands within 60 seconds. It also incorporates a new form of digital modulation called PSM, or pulse step modulation. The modulation is performed actually on the incoming AC line. The power comes in off the street, is transformed into, I can't remember the number, but I think it's 32 different secondaries. There's diode switching done at each of those. It's a square wave modulation. Then it goes into some capacitors, which round that off, and then that drives the final tube. So you have basically a modulation that is on-off digital modulation as the power line sees it, which is extremely efficient. It's 10% more efficient than any other form of modulation. However, it's very stressful to the incoming power line because it's literally cycling on and off from full power. And so you have to bring the power in at a very high voltage. So if you brought in the voltage at too low of a level, all you'd have to do would be to speak in the mic and it would blow every circuit breaker all the way back to the power plant.
Ham transceivers today, Rick, as you know, have either selectable or automatic audio processing of some sort. But many of us have heard excessive processing on the ham bands, especially during contests and DX pileups, resulting in adjacent QRM. Or splatter. What problems do you in the international shortwave industry have with splatter?
All broadcasters have to adhere to the splatter regulation and monitor that sort of thing very carefully. They only will cause that splatter if there's overmodulation. Our particular transmitter has a brick wall clipper in it that will just absolutely not permit a signal beyond a certain level to get through it, no matter what processor you're using. In addition, we have a brick wall equalizer that literally cuts anything above 4.5 kilohertz, or limited to 4.5K audio.
How many people, Rick, are employed with WCSN, and how many of those are licensed ham operators?
Well, we have approximately 110 employees at our studios in Boston in all of radio, including technical and editorial areas. Of those, I would say we have about three or four licensed hams. At the station in Maine, at WCSN, at the station proper, I believe we have a staff of 13 individuals, including management. And out of those 13, I think there's only one or two that are not hams.
I know this really isn't your department, but do you think being a licensed ham had something to do with their being hired at WCSN?
That's an interesting question. I'm not involved in hiring those particular people. But I would say that from my perspective, if I had a job opening in the RF field, I would very strongly favor an individual with a ham license. The reason being that if they have a ham license, it's in their blood. RF is in their blood. They probably have an SWR meter in their bloodstream someplace because it's a hobby, and they're intimately involved in it. Someone who is not involved in the hobby, well, that's not always the case. There are many professionals, of course, that don't into it in the hobby. But if they're active hams, then they understand all the technology involved, and generally they're very good people in the RF business.
That was a short conversation Hap Holly, KC9RP, had with the late Rick Dearborn, N1CKU, radio operations manager in the late 80s for WCSN, an international shortwave juggernaut owned at the time by the Christian Science Publishing Society in Boston, Massachusetts. WCSN transmitted 500 kilowatts into a 300-foot-high Sturba curtain from the state of Maine. That would get your attention. Classic Rain hamcasts are copyright 1987-2020 Rain. All rights reserved. Now for Hap Holly, KC9RP, I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR, bidding you very 73 from the Radio Amateur Information Network. We'll post our 18th hamcast in May. Keep on hamming.